where the dissonance really came in for me was I knew what a good person was and that I was a good person, and I knew what a gay person was and that I was gay, but both couldn't coexist.
That was Megs Pulvermacher, and you're listening to episode 293 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only six things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April and I'm your host. I'm so happy that you're with me this Wednesday. This week we're going to be talking about some really fundamental psychological topics, all through a very specific lens, and I'll get there in just one moment. Before I get there, I want to mention just one quick thing. A lot of you probably come here because you are searching for information, tools, tips, tricks, techniques to help you become a better person, experience life more fully or in a more engaged way, to be a more authentically you, to experience peace or ease or joy or alignment. And I love that. I love that you're here for that. I love that we can all come together for as this community, for this podcast, you know, a couple times a week, and we can work on ourselves and explore some of these topics that have the possibility to be life-changing if you let them. So why am I bringing that up this week? This week is going to be an interesting one because for many of you, the specific lens through which we are exploring this week's topics, it may not directly apply to you. This week, we're going to be talking about the journey of coming out as a gay, lesbian, queer, transgender, etc. individual. So if you are joining me and you're thinking, okay, that just doesn't necessarily apply to me directly, please stay for two reasons. And I'll mention this in the episode as well, but it's worth it to mention it twice, because it's important. Number one, if you're here purely for really self-interested purposes, that's amazing. Be here for it. There is zero judgment that you would be introspective, self-examining enough to say, I can do better. I can learn more about myself. I can be better. And I'm going to go seek out a resource to help me do that. That's awesome. And if that's why you're here, please stay, because there are amazing insights in this episode for you, even if you are not queer identifying or non-binary or any of the things that we're going to talk about today. But a second reason, if you have someone in your life, and maybe you might not even realize, who is going through, is about to go through, has gone through, might go through the coming out process that we're talking about today with this week's guest, talk about an amazing way to understand a little bit more of the nuance, definitely not all, but a bit more of the nuance, a bit more of the emotion, a bit more of the hardship, and a bit more of the struggle, and also the joy of what it means to go through that process. Talk about a way to equip yourself as a better ally who's just a bit more compassionate and a bit more empathetic. Talk about a gift that you could give somebody else in your family or a friend or a coworker or someone else in your life. That's why I want you to stay. Now I want to talk directly to the audience who may directly benefit from this episode. I see you. This, we'll talk about in the episode a bit about safe spaces to bring your full self, to be your full self, to express yourself and to explore a little bit, this is one of those spaces. This is a space that you can come and trust, that you can explore yourself and the inner workings of what it means to be you, just like everybody else is. In the nuanced way that you're working on right now, this is a safe space to do that exploration, to contemplate what it means to be you and how you authentically show up in the world. This is one of those spaces. I did this episode out of adoration and love for the LGBTQIA community. You are so loved exactly as you are. All right, let's get into this week's guest. You're going to love her. You're absolutely going to love her. This week, we are speaking with Megs Pulvermacher. Her pronouns are she, her. And she is a nationally certified school psychologist by day. And she is a creative change maker by night. She hosts the wildly successful podcast Out What Now? And it's dedicated to helping queer folks navigate the ups and downs of the coming out journey, all while having as much fun as possible. She's also the creator of the Queer Impact Collective, which is an international online community for queer-identifying entrepreneurs, creatives, and changemakers who come together with the overarching goal of amplifying queer voices and empowering queer missions. The collective currently serves queer changemakers representing 5 countries and 28 states in the United States. Talk about an incredible community. This episode is awesome. We talk a lot about the coming out journey, specifically from a very psychological lens. This would not be the Building Psych Strength podcast if we didn't. But we talk about some fundamental things like our identity, what it is, where it comes from, and how it comes into play when we are rediscovering ourselves or maybe revealing ourselves to other people in a way that we haven't before. What that means to accept and recognize in ourselves, and what it means to start to make that shift. There are some really interesting pieces there. We talk a lot about safety, psychological safety, and external safety. Megs has an incredible message in that regard. We also talk about what it means to have when we have a desire to want to put people into boxes, and how that comes to fruition when we're talking about something as fluid as gender and as sexuality, and all of the stuff that comes along with that. We talk about cognitive load and how mentally taxing it can be to navigate the process when you aren't completely out and are deciding what to share with whom and in what context, and so many other fundamentally important topics. Megs also talks a lot about the Queer Impact Collective. And if you're a person who is, you know, directly impacted by this episode and is seeking community, I would highly suggest you check out her collective, because it is such an incredible resource where you can truly be in a non-judgmental safe space to explore and find and express and just be. I'm so excited for you guys to meet Megs. She is just a ball of energy, but also an incredibly talented and experienced professional, which makes her just the best combination of an incredible guest for this podcast. So without further ado, please meet Megs Pulvermacher. All right, Ms. Megs, I'm so happy you are here today. I'm so thrilled we get to have this important conversation. You are just a light and a force in the world, and I'm so excited that my audience gets to meet you. Thanks for being here.
I am so pumped to be here and be a light with you, because same.
Yay. So I'm really excited about what we're going to be talking about today, because it's a topic that I haven't covered on the podcast yet, and I don't know how. But as this came to mind the other day, specifically around the topic of coming out as a gay, queer, lesbian individual, I was like, there's so much psychology underneath going through a process like that and an experience like that. And I'm like, this conversation needs to be had. And I know exactly who to reach out to have it. So I'm so pumped.
Well, I couldn't be more excited to talk about it. I talk about being queer on the internet every day. So it's a good topic, I think, to cover because it is so often pathologized and not talked about in a way related at all to psychological strength, even though it takes a ton of it to go through the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to just throw a quick, I don't even know, like disclaimer out there. If you're a person who identifies as straight and you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I don't know if this episode is necessarily for me. I don't know if I'm gonna learn anything from this. I would really encourage you to stick around because number one, even if you're just coming from a pure self-interested standpoint, which is totally fine, right? That's why you come to podcasts like these. You want to learn something that helps you better yourself. So no judgment there. That's great. You're going to learn about some core concepts today that 100% apply to you, no matter what your situation. And that's a very broad definition. Number two, everybody has someone in their life who either has gone through, is going through, or will go through this experience. And understanding it from a more nuanced perspective and in the way that we're going to talk about it can help you be more understanding, more compassionate, more aware of what that person might be going through. So no matter your situation or circumstances, I suggest you stick around for this conversation because it's an important one.
Super important.
And yes.
We can't do it without allies.
Yay.
And you definitely have queer people in your life, whether you know.
Yes, 100%. So I don't even know where to start because I feel like there is, if we kind of follow the process of coming out from end to end, there's likely, and I'm going to disclaim this too, like I'm coming at this from a very outsider perspective of being a straight woman and not knowing firsthand, right? So at any point in time, jump in, correct, or adjust how I'm describing things. But there's this point at which you, in any psychological experience, you start to recognize that something is amiss. The very initial recognition that you may be different than other people or other people are or other people told you you were. Can you talk a little bit about in the work that you've done in your own experience, in your experience with working with other people, how that comes to be and the feelings and experience associated with those early realizations? And I'm assuming that could happen at a lot of different ages, but those early realizations.
Yeah, I have noticed that the realization experience and how that comes to be is very similar for a lot of people, but happens at a lot of different points in life. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of the folks I work with, within the collective and in my work now, there are a lot of folks who come out later in life. I came to the realization quite early. I would say 13, 14 mm-hmm. was about where I was when I was like, oh, my body is reacting in a very different way when I'm in like close proximity to my friends, or also not really understanding the boyfriend thing or what people around me were describing as what was supposed to be my typical experience. Mm-hmm. And that was a very kind of, oh shit, mm-hmm. I'm not aligning. And I think I knew what it was, the gay thing. I was able to identify what that was. I think a lot of people say, you know, I didn't have a word for it. I didn't have language. I knew what it was, and I knew it wasn't okay because I was raised in a very Catholic family and I went to Catholic school. I was very involved in the church, which actually increased at the more I became familiar with my sexuality and what that meant. And so it was there was a lot of dissonance there because as I was growing into understanding what that could mean over the long term for me, as far as acceptance and what if my parents find out and maybe I just need to wait and the right guy or boy, I guess at the time, will come along and make me happy. And this will all just make sense. It's just the devil playing a trick on me or something like that. And where the dissonance really came in for me was I knew what a good person was and that I was a good person. And I knew what a gay person was and that I was gay, but both couldn't coexist. So my kind of internal thought, this was more in high school, was, well, I can't be both and I know I'm good, so I must not be gay.
And
so it was, that was a very weird thing because, you know, they can't coexist.
Yeah.
They're completely separate. So that was a very weird thing to go through. Kind of, I guess if we're talking cognitively, like with where my brain was at, I just couldn't sort out how one could be true and or not. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's okay. Psych detour for a second. I love that you shared that because from just a pure cognitive and well, social cognitive standpoint, we talk about identity in a little bit of a different way. Sometimes people, and I hear a lot of that in what you're saying. Sometimes people, when we talk about identity, you know, you'll see worksheets and things on the internet that say, oh, your identity is how you would fill in the sentence. I am a mother. I am a wife. I am a sister. I am a friend. We look at those as roles that you play. They're not identity. From a social cognitive perspective, we look at identity as what your mind has learned from the moment you were born, what it has learned about what it means to be you and people like you. So we passively learn a lot of this information when we're younger. We're just sponges. We just accept it all. We just take it all in as though it's fact. And the thought process there evolutionarily is that the stuff you hear more often, more strongly, more consistently is probably the true stuff. And the stuff that you only hear occasionally, it's okay if you accepted it as fact because you only heard it once and it's probably going to get trumped by everything else. Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily flesh out that way when you think about sources of identity being your parents, your friends, people who look, act, live by whatever that community of people who are, quote, like you. It can be sources from churches and other organizations hierarchically in society. It can be our social groups, what it means to be a woman or Black or a Black woman, and all of the intersection of all of that. We learn a body of knowledge about what it means to be that. And most of the time that's fed us by external people who don't yet, and lots of times, not lots of times, sometimes well-intentioned, sometimes not, without the knowledge of who you actually are on the inside. Mm-hmm. So you get this construct of who people like you are, and all of a sudden it doesn't match who you're realizing you actually are. Oh, and talk about dissonance. That's the exact right word.
It's such a great word. Yeah, it's what makes me really sad about it when I go back and think back to, you know, 12, 13, 14 year old me and all of the things that I learned. And when my parent, because parents know, and I think my parents were pretty, not in denial, but just sort of avoided it. Also hoped it would just go away, kind of a thing. And like you said, people are operating, or people who are trying to guide us are trying to create this environment of safety from their perception of what safety means. And also safety, I think, externally, right, is what they think of. But what it teaches, what it taught me was that it's not safe to trust myself. And so, and what I feel and what I know to be true for me. And it created safety externally from judgment, from bullying, from all of these external sources. But internally, it was just chaos because I learned that I couldn't trust myself or what I knew to be true. And I was always looking to the outside for approval and what does safety mean and what is the right thing, instead of being able to trust me, who's with me everywhere I go, even if my environment does change, which is a pretty sad thing, really.
Oh my gosh, that's an incredible distinction. It's an incredible distinction because it's a tough one, because you can see where even the most well-intentioned parents, like let's make an assumption right now, you've got this, you know, this arbitrary set of parents, not necessarily yours, not necessarily any listeners, but like random set of parents who have the best of intentions, want to help you avoid judgment, help you avoid, you know, social friction, all of that. Yet we know internally that friction, internally that dissonance, that misalignment is some of the most damaging things that you can experience for a lot of the reasons that you've articulated. And it's funny because I'm curious, did you or do you find with the folks that you've worked with that the more you're denying or the more that you've denied your own internal sense of self, intuition, compass about what feels right and not right for you, even to the point that you're denying, I would imagine, your own bodily experience, do you start to disconnect from it? And I have a specific reason of asking this, but I want to hear your experience first, or your clients' even experiences.
Yeah, I think isolation, feeling alone, and just these withdrawal behaviors are the number one thing that people will have experienced, certainly the ones that I have. And it's so isolating to be just alone with yourself because you feel like no one else is going to get it, or it's not safe to talk about what it is that you're going through. And that's why I think that's why you see a lot of these more unhealthy or undesired behaviors like substance abuse or issues with food or all of these external things that we're trying to do to connect. That was a thing that I did. I couldn't connect with anyone on a more soul deep level where I was actually talking about what was going on with me internally. So I found connection and community in food and alcohol and all of these things that have made me get to places that are a little more dark that I had to, you know, work through to kind of come out of. I think it's seeking to connect in ways that feel more safe because we can't share, and that withdrawn isolation, I don't know, the two don't match, but they coexist.
I can totally imagine. It's funny because I'm going to use an example that is a bit out of the context, but I think is relevant here. When I talked with people about the experience of COVID, right, we've had this like in the context of our whole lives, hopefully all of us live really long lives. It's going to be a flash in the pan. It's not, you know, it'll be a meaningful, important experience, but, you know, comparatively short. However, when I talked with people about this COVID situation and the stress and pressure that we all went under, I use this analogy of a dam. Like, imagine you've got a dam and there's all this water building up behind it. At some point, every dam has their capacity. It just does. And if you don't release pressure somehow, it's going to come out at a weak point. It's going to come out sideways. It's going to find a way to release its own pressure. Human beings are a lot like that, where
if the pressure builds up, if the anxiety builds up, if that dissonance you talked about builds up, we can either choose to release it and decide how it's going to come out, or it's going to come out sideways, typically in the form of some other type of habit that helps us avoid or numb or lessen or disconnect or whatever it happens to be. Like, we will get that need met, just maybe not in the way that we want to. And it's just because we're human beings, and that's how human being animals work. You know, like so much of what we talk about in Building Psych Strength is, this is just how minds work. And if you're a human being with a mind, this is how it is. It doesn't mean you're weak or deficient or wrong in some ways. It means your mind is doing what minds do. And that makes so much sense in this context, that if that pressure is building up, it has to go somewhere.
Yeah. And I think that's both, that operates in two ways, I think. For it can create these very challenging, maybe you could label them negative or less optimal experiences and behaviors. Yeah. And it's also the reason that a lot of folks in the queer community do such amazing, powerful work in art and in service-driven sectors where they have the freedom to express themselves. If that ends up being the outlet, it really can be a superpower as well. It's just, like you said, how that gets expressed depending on which weak point of the dam all the things are being released through. But it can kind of go both ways.
Yeah, I could totally see that. That makes a ton of sense. Okay, so you go through this process of realizing, coming to the, you know, understanding that, okay, yep, it isn't just a phase. It's not something that's going to go away. Brad Pitt can walk in. It doesn't matter. It's not him, or any hymns. But then I can imagine there is another, like, even bigger potentially process of coming to full terms with it, telling other people, experiencing even some of that external safety or lack of safety that you talked about before, where people will have judgments. How would you, like, walk us through how that feels from that perspective? And I'm sure there's some things we can dig into there as well, but I can imagine that is, like, it doesn't, I'm assuming it doesn't get easier once you've realized, like, you're not out of the woods necessarily yet.
No, I, you know, they have the whole, you've probably heard of the It Gets Better project.
Yeah.
And everything, which is a lovely concept. Lovely. But not always true for everyone. You know, things maybe get easier, or you might get better at managing the things that are hard about existing in this way. But you know, there are families who never come to acceptance. There are workplaces that will, for whatever loophole reason, never have to maintain your employment if you are out at work or you get outed or something like that. There are going to be places where it's always going to be illegal to be queer or to just exist. And it really is, I think, kind of the full acceptance, or the acceptance piece of it, is accepting that you will never be done coming out, because every single time you meet a new person, or you join something, or you're in a new community, or anything, you come out every single time. I mean, yeah, it's really never over. And you get more comfortable with that eventually, to a point, although it, as identity, sexuality, and those things are very fluid, they can change. And so that experience can be reoccurring for a lot of folks in the community who are experiencing more fluidity in how they identify, because there are so many elements to identity. But I think it is an element of safety in every situation that you're in, whether it's social, work is a big one, with disclosure at work. I've been working as a school psychologist for, this will be my 10th year. and working in education, I have been out the past 5 years in the current district I work in, but the first two jobs I had, I wasn't out at all because I was working in small, predominantly white, affluent, religious communities where there is, maybe I would be able to maintain my employment, but you might have experiences where parents don't want you working with their kids, or the rumor mill can do a lot of things to drive people out of a political environment, like a school or something like that. And I was coaching as well, coaching softball. And so there's a lot of things to work through as far as what are the costs and benefits of disclosing in this environment versus this one? Where is it safe? Where might it not be? And how can this impact me socially, emotionally, financially, within all of these systems that we exist in? It seeps into everything. So it's a never-ending process that I think is more about accepting that this is something that we'll always be working through, and just focusing on managing it the best you can, leading with love and trying to find the joy in it, because it's never going away.
I'm so glad you characterized it that way. And that's such an honest way of talking about it. I'm curious too, when I think about, you know, we talk a lot about overwhelm, cognitive overwhelm, decision fatigue, mental load. Those get talked about a lot in the context of like managing a family or in your job or whatever, but they really apply this notion of cognitive overwhelm, cognitive load, decision fatigue, all of those related cousins of psychological things. They apply in any situation where there's too much information or too many decisions for you to manage or make given your current capability. I can imagine this is an exhausting experience. I mean, you are talking about trying to forecast and predict the feelings, values, decisions, behaviors, whatever, of nearly everyone, and a completely changing set of, you know, potentially implications for it forever. I mean, that is like exhausting. I can imagine, like, you just, it's got to be so tiring to be in that position, just like mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I think that's one of the things that's been so cool about doing the Queer Impact Collective has become such a safe space for people to explore the things they don't feel comfortable or safe to do yet out in their businesses. And so what we talk about a lot, and really the underlying goal of something like the collective, is to manage some of that cognitive load in that space, be able to talk about fears about being out in their businesses, unaccepting families, erasure within the queer community, not feeling queer enough to be able to brand themselves as a queer entrepreneur, or different things like that. And when those things get managed in a space where they feel safe to do so, productivity, sales, showing up boldly and authentically on video or in their social media presence or on their podcast, because they've been able to manage that in a safe space, creates so much more room for productivity that then creates this ripple effect and permission slips for other folks who are taking in that content or accessing those services to be able to do the same thing as well. That's really the whole underlying thing. And it was it's been a huge thing for me too, because when I've been in spaces where I've had to compartmentalize my life and remember who knows which aspects of what I'm doing or not doing, being able to be out everywhere or feel organized in the spaces that I have control over creates so much more room to then show up on Instagram doing some kind of crazy dance or being high energy, because I now have the space to do that that I didn't have before.
Yeah. Oh man. And there's some interesting things here too, around when that happens chronically, like when we are chronically taxed to the point where we have no cognitive spaciousness left, we start to feel normal in that situation. Again, I'm going to give a dumb example that is out of the context of this just to like anchor us. When I did my TEDx talk, TEDx is a full, it was 12 minutes, had to be fully memorized. I was freaking the heck out, right? So I spent weeks memorizing this talk, walking around 5 a.m., my kitchen island, walking around memorizing this talk. And what I didn't, I just thought it was fine and normal. And we're talking about a sliver of what you've experienced, right? Or what you've just talked about. When that talk was over, I got up the next morning and I was like, look at how much space there is in here. Like, what? Because all of the sudden, the pressure of giving the talk was gone. It was just lifted. And there was a void there that I didn't realize had consumed every nook and cranny of my mind. I can imagine that when you're in this situation for years, potentially decades, in so many different aspects of your life, you may not even realize how taxed your mind is and how much more capacity you could have if you could dump some of that load into this collective, right? That cognitive load, if you could just set it down for even a moment inside the collective or a place like that, to just get some space to breathe.
Absolutely. And I think you allies, I hope you're still with us. I'm sure you are, because if April tells me to do something, I would do it. So I think this is a really cool spot to just a little pitch to allies. This is why things like pronouns or using gender neutral terms when you're talking to people, like in workspaces or out in social things, like, do you have a partner, or different opportunities like that, when queer folks who maybe aren't even out yet, or maybe they are, when they see things like pronouns in an Instagram profile or something on an agenda that indicates safe spaces, it removes some of that cognitive load for us in that particular environment. And that's one of the tiny things that I think allies can do to kind of help catch some of that stuff, because it requires less awareness or less cognitive load on us for that particular interaction to understand that we are safe and this is a space where we don't have to spend energy on that, so we can focus on whatever the actual topic is. Because I hear a lot of folks just curious, why does it matter? Obviously, I'm feminine presenting, so my pronouns are going to be she, her. I don't understand why that matters for queer folks. And that's one of the reasons. I think if you're going to get to take a very psychological lens to it, I think that's a way that allies can really show up and kind of help with that piece as well.
I love that. And talk about, too, a lesson in just flat out compassion, because we've all been in an experience where we're either overwhelmed, we're stressed, there's a thing that we're managing or dealing with. And it doesn't matter if it's like, you know, maybe your kid is struggling in school right now and you're sort of preoccupied with that or whatever. We all know how good it feels to have somebody who either explicitly, maybe they say this, or just in the way that they are, that they've got you, like you're good. Mm-hmm. You don't, and I'm coming to this for a reason, because something you mentioned before, the fluidity of all of this. There's another aspect that I want to make sure that we don't miss here, in that psychologically, we like certainty. We like to be able to say, here is the box that I check. Other people like it when we can do that. And I think that's part of the like psychological, like rare with pronouns, especially pronouns that are they, them, or ones that aren't like, darn it, now you aren't like super predictable and you don't fit into a box and that makes me mad, right? Mm-hmm. But we also don't like it when we don't know what box to check. And even if it's we don't know what box to check yet, it feels uncertain, it feels volatile, it feels complicated, it feels ambiguous, all the VUCA things that our mind hates. And I can imagine that it's difficult to navigate that because not only are you navigating, you're now on the side of the fence where people are going to have questions. You're going to have some, you're going to have to continuously come out, all the things that you've said, but you're sort of, I'm going to keep going with this terrible analogy, like walking around the yard over there and not sure which part of the yard you're in yet, or maybe you're just like exploring and figuring it out for yourself. That's tough for other people and for us about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think if we just acknowledge that, it's okay to have a hard time with that, especially, you know, if you are still navigating it and it's likely to bring up some pushback from your mind, where it's that identity we talked about before clashing with, okay, well, fine. If you are on that side of the fence, then fine. But now you can't, you know, it might feel like you can't even quote unquote prove it or know exactly how to characterize it because you're still, I'm like fumbling, but it's a tough concept to explain. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine that it would be really hard to go through.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate in my experience as a pretty standard white lesbian. Like I played softball. I checked a lot of boxes that just made sense. And that doesn't mean it wasn't hard, but I haven't experienced personally a lot of fluidity and I have a lot of privilege in that. It's easy for me to walk into a space and people kind of get it. Like I'm one of those people where people can kind of like, look at me, listen to me talk. I mean, now I'm just leading the way with queer stuff. So like, oh yeah, like softball lesbian. That's great. And those boxes, there are challenges that come with boxes as well. Mm-hmm. But what I see from folks, particularly in the collective, is a lot of pushback, not only from family who don't get like, what is this queer thing? Or you just haven't found the right person yet. Or folks who are in what many call straight passing relationships, but who identify as queer. There's a lot of erasure that comes along with that, with identity for folks who maybe visually fit into boxes for people, but yeah, they themselves don't identify as being within those boxes. And there's a lot of pushback within the queer community about checking boxes, because I think for so many people in the queer community, they've spent so much time wandering around the yard looking for that Easter egg of, oh, this one is me, that once they've found it, they also want to be able to organize, okay, who is like me and am I queer enough? The amount of conversations we have had in the collective about not feeling queer enough is mind-blowing to me. It's mind-blowing because it's this, we get into this space of, if you have an issue with family, you're too queer over here. And then you're like, oh, I'm queer and I'm going to go, I should be able to find community here with other queer folks. And they're like, not queer enough. So then you experience even more isolation when you don't fit the boxes that people on both sides of the fence are asking you to check, which is all about them, of course.
Yes.
It's not about you, but it's largely that difference of leading with fear for people who are like, you got to check my box, or, you know, just brains trying to organize things so that you know if this, then that. And identity just isn't like that. So I think what ends up being the answer, or the easiest way that I've found to navigate something like that, is leading with curiosity, both as you're learning about someone else and their experience and as you're navigating your own.
I love that. That's a great segue actually into, you know, we were talking before we hopped on to record about the beauty of the collective and how a lot of people, when they come to you, are looking for more peace. And how do I be more peaceful? How do I be more even self-accepting? How do I feel compassionate to myself? How do I feel like I belong in a group somewhere? Mm-hmm. And those are all such basic human needs, right? So of course you want that, because you wouldn't be a human being if you didn't want those things. Peace and safety. Yep. That's pretty basic to want that.
Yeah.
And belonging and compassion. Of course you do, right? How do you, like, if there are folks listening to this who are like, yep, I'm all or some of what she's talking about in this episode. Yep. I feel all those things deeply. One or more of the things that you've said. How do they get started? How do they begin to develop that within themselves, work that into their life? I mean, how do you help people with that within the collective?
As far as coming into their identity?
Coming into their identity, feeling more at peace, feeling more self-compassion, feeling more settled in this space that, you know, for some people might feel new, for others might have been a friction point or struggle for a little while. And maybe, you know, they're now more realizing that, okay, this could be more peaceful, better.
Yeah. I think, gosh, for me personally, I have found the most peace in kind of starting with just having conversations with myself, or just getting used to sitting with myself. Mm. And I know meditation is, that's a tough thing for some folks to sit and do that. And it's a scary thing. Quiet mm-hmm. is a scary thing, which is, mm-hmm. I think, honestly, why a lot of people came out during COVID, because all we did was sit with ourselves. But you, whether it's meditation or just listening to a song with lyrics that you connect with emotionally or something like that, or getting into journaling and getting used to either hearing things that resonate, writing things that resonate, and then eventually I think it becomes easier to have conversations, whether it's with a coach or a therapist or a trusted friend or something. That's kind of the progression that I've had to go through.
Yeah.
It was a lot of getting used to having those conversations with myself and then being in a spot where I was able to open up with a coach and then a community and then eventually be able to lead a community through that process too.
I love it. This is a good segue actually to maybe talk about your community with the collective, because I mean, talk about a safe space, right? A place where you can come and explore and find and seek and, you know, be in community with other people who are at various stages and whatever of the same journey. I would love for you to tell this audience a bit about it. If there's people listening who feel like they could benefit, or an ally, family member, friend, whatever it happens to be, of someone who might really benefit.
Yeah. So the Queer Impact Collective is my favorite thing ever. I can't even believe
it. You should see your face light up when you talk about this. I mean, we went from this serious conversation. It was like, boom, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Keep going.
I just can't even believe it's real. Like the amount of progress that I have made in my own acceptance of my own queerness and what it has done for me as a human, just with myself, in my relationships with friends and romantically in my family and for my business, and how I'm able to show up in all of these different realms. The work I've done on that in the past year has been absolutely life-changing for me. And I was able to do that because I finally worked with a coach who was also queer and was able to take me through this process of really learning to trust myself and how much power there is in being able to show up more boldly and authentically as myself, including my queerness. I've always been Megs. I've always been high energy, fun, really, as a psychologist, really liking talking about mindset, et cetera. But I noticed this shift in really how I was able to show up, how my voice changes, what my face does, like you just said, where I'm showing up fully authentically in a space. And so I created the collective because I thought to myself, as I was looking around, where there's got to be more queer entrepreneurs who are out here doing the thing. And there were a ton, but we were all on our own little islands. And what I noticed was this common thread, and you see this, I think, a lot in folks who are in marginalized communities, that people who want to make it better for the next generation that's coming, they want to serve those people in whatever way it is that they served, whether it's a product or a service or something like that. And I thought, I've had such great experiences in masterminds and the power that comes in having a big network and being able to promote each other. And what could we do if all of these passionate queer folks were in one room talking about their businesses and their missions and sharing their voices and their stories? What could we do? And so I started hosting these meetups in December of 2020. And I just kind of started with, you know, LGBTQ plus women who are in a business or want to start a podcast or are speaking or do whatever. Come on over, let's have a beer, let's hang out and just kind of get to know each other and see how we can promote and support one another. And now it's grown to a membership community where it's a monthly membership, and we have 50 members in 5 countries and 23 states of these queer entrepreneurs all over the world, lesbian, bisexual, queer, trans, gender fluid, like everything. We got photographers, we got VAs, we have psychologists, we have money coaches, we have people in fitness, we have so many different people. If there is a thing out there that someone needs, there is a queer person who does it. And so what we do though in the collective, I mean, it's business focused. So sometimes we'll like give feedback on a sales page, or people will do market research, but it's kind of like what I talked about before. It's a space where people can go, an entrepreneurial space that is a queer affinity space where you are in a room where you do not need to ever explain what makes you queer, how queer you are. You don't have to talk about when you came out or like any of that stuff. It's all just kind of understood and creates all of this space to have conversations about what's hard, what do you need to work through. We've talked about money and people who are trying to get their finances in order. We've talked about being misgendered as a business owner and how to talk to a client about that. We've talked about pricing and how queer, like mindset of queer folks in their pricing, and how we tend to kind of sell ourselves short and things like that, which I think is a thing for every entrepreneur, but with it through that queer lens, it's just this mind-blowing space of mind-blowingly awesome people who are doing great things in the world, and they're able to do it more boldly, authentically, and confidently because they have this space that then has allowed their businesses to start, to explode, to create amazing events with collaborations, and it's pretty freaking cool.
Oh my gosh. I feel like the Grinch. My heart just grew three sizes today. This is so awesome. That's incredible. And what an incredible gift and resource and space for people to have access to, because I can imagine, like, oh my gosh, entrepreneurial life is scary enough, hard enough, complicated enough without the addition of everything that we just talked about. So good on you for recognizing a need and making it happen. That's incredible.
Thanks. It's just nuts, because one of the things that I used to do as before I really came to a more bold acceptance of my queerness was avoid having queer friends. So I went from zero to a whole heck of a lot more than that very quickly.
That's amazing. I love it. I love it. I'm so curious to ask you, I ask everybody this question, but I'm really excited for your answer. In the context of everything that you do, what does psychological strength look like?
Psychological strength looks like recognizing and believing that you're already enough and you're already worthy of love. And I think then actively choosing to grow through that lens is what it means for me, is understanding that that baseline, you are already enough where you are, and using your experiences to grow.
Megs, you're awesome. I'm so glad that you are here. I'm so glad that we were able to make this work and that you are so bold and so authentically you both. I mean, here, obviously, because this was an amazing conversation and so valuable to this audience, but to the value that you're providing to your community through your podcast, I mean, through everything, it's so needed. You know, we talked about belonging and all of that just being such a basic human need. And you are truly providing that to this community, both, I mean, obviously, you know, queer, gay, lesbian, trans, I mean, everybody that is in your collective, but also good on you for helping those of us who also want to be a safe space, do better and be better, to be a better safe haven, to extend the walls of what you're trying to do, even by just a little bit. So you're so awesome. I'm so thrilled you were here. This is just the highlight already of the beginning of my week. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. Keep it queer out there.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.